Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
He's Danny, I'm Grant, this is The Fan. Thanks to Pete, as always, for getting us up to date. It is Friday, the weekend looms. You got anything going on this weekend? Mix it up a little bit, Danny, from your normal pandemic monotony?
No, I've usually had that Sunday 12 to 3 spot, right, where I've just been passed around like a floozy around the town, right? I've worked with everybody, it seems. I've done nothing but Sundays. I've got the Saturday Bickle shift. So Bickle and I will dance together Saturday from 12 to 3, which just kind of, you know, that means that's what I'm doing on Saturday because you don't have enough time in the morning and then your afternoon is a little bit, you know, a little bit cut short. So glad to do it, but Bickle and I will be doing the dance on Saturday. So no, nothing special outside of that, my friend. What about you?
9 to noon, Sunday with Pete. I think I might try to get home and get a dip in the parents' pool. First time the pool has been open at this point at the folks' house. So I think that will be the game plan. The baby loves the water. So take her, get her into the pool, and that'll be a good way to spend an afternoon.
That'll do it.
Socially distant day outdoors around the swimming pool, I think might be satisfactory for what the doctor's ordering as well. That wouldn't violate any policies, I don't believe. So I'll do a little more digging on that. But that is the plan as of right now. I saw this on Twitter within the last couple of days. People were asking, what batting stance did you emulate the most as a kid? Everyone could kind of rip off, I'm guessing, 10 to 12, 15, 20, and tell me all the batting stances that they did. Because most people have... You study them or you look at them or you see enough players and you can do it. But who was, you think, of your childhood? Not today Danny Ruhier doing batting stance impressions. Right. But your childhood, the guy whose batting stance you used.
Calvin Edwin Ripken Jr. That's the answer. I didn't
Which
know anything
the 800,
about anything.
Though? He had a different batting stance every week.
And so did I as a kid before I figured out what I was comfortable with. So, yeah, I would tune in. What's he doing this week? That's what I'm doing. I did everything from you know, sort of playing the pan flute. Remember when he had that when the bat's on his shoulder and it's very flat and he's like, you know, keeping his hands loose. So he's doing the motion that you would do with your hands while you're playing the flute. I did the stand straight upright MVP stance where my right elbow is almost like double jointed because it's sticking up so high to keep the bat at a vertical angle so I could come down and through. I did everything. I did whatever Cal Ripken did. I did the crouch. I did the stand straight up like a statue and everything in between.
So mine is random because this – I loved this guy for a couple of years, but I wouldn't say he was one of my favorite players ever or anything like that. Albert Bell. Albert Bell, who played for the Indians from 89 to 96 and then spent 2 years with the White Sox, including a 49-homer season. Think about this. So I'm 10 years old, about to be 11, and the Orioles sign Albert Bell in the offseason. And at 32 years old, coming off basically 50 jacks in the middle of the steroid era, they bring him in. Now, in Baltimore in 2 years, he hit 37 and 23 homers. He had a degenerative hip problem, and it didn't go the way it was supposed to. But when they brought him in, that's a massive acquisition. He was eighth in the MVP voting and won the Silver Slugger, playing every single day. Didn't miss a game for the White Sox. So he drove in 152 runs and hit 49 bombs, and now he's coming to my beloved Baltimore Orioles in the prime of his career. I mean, if you're a 10, 11-year-old Nats fan or you got a kid that's that age and they're all in on the Nats, imagine if they signed 51-50. You know, they don't even have players like that anymore with those numbers, but that's Giancarlo, that's Christian Yelich. So that was me at that age, and I'm playing Little League Baseball. Mm-hmm. I am in Little League, you know, in the minors, the majors, that at 11 years old at that time. So what did I do? Everything Albert Bell did. I bought Albert Bell cleats. had the 88 on the side. I would step out after every single pitch, and I would take the two practice swings that Albert Bell did. His yes. stance, if you look it up, it's very much like the back elbow is kind of high, and it's almost, I don't want to say a 90-degree angle, but like his arms and his elbows are oddly pointed out in the direct, like straight-armed, is how I would describe it on the radio.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, everything he did, I would take a step out, I would swing twice. Now, as it turned out, I went on to meet Albert Bell the first time I was ever at a baseball game with media access and a press credential. I was there with Channel 9 in Washington for opening day in the 1999 season. So the Orioles had just acquired Albert Bell, Will Clark. I'm trying to think there was a third member, I think, that offseason. But it was like a big splashy offseason for them where things were about to get pretty good.
Marty Cordova, was it then? Was it that guy?
He was after, I think. He was closer to like the Javi Lopez, Rafael Palmeiro coming back time frame.
I thought that guy was going to be really good, and I was wrong about that.
There was a time. I think he was the rookie of the year at one point. So when I met Albert Bell, I've told you this story. I've got a short list of guys who were just huge jerks to me as a kid. Just massive jerks to me. And he is on that list. So yeah. I go up to him to interview him as a little kid, microphone, camera crew, whatever. Everyone's being great. Cal Ripken Jr. is pulling up a chair and just talk to me for 15 minutes, whatever I want to talk about, open forum. And then I walk up to Albert Bell, who's eating, I remember it as strawberry yogurt. I'm not sure if exactly what it could have been, pudding, something like that. It was in a little, those tiny little canisters that, where the top comes out further than the rest of the little tub so you can hold it in your hand.
Okay.
And he's taking a spoon into it and getting just a very little bit on the tip of his spoon, like with every bite. Nobody is near him. Nobody is around him. People are like afraid to go up and talk to him because, the reputation is this is just a jerk kind of guy.
He's a jerk.
He doesn't deal with the media. So I'm like, well, I don't care about that. Like, number one, I've always had this philosophy, like, what's the worst that can happen? Someone can be mean to me? Okay, fine. Second, at that time, if I'm being honest with you, because I was 10, like, I didn't have a lot of people being mean to me. Even, like, all the people that were like, don't go up to that guy, he won't talk to you. They were great to me. So I'm like, oh, Albert Bell and me, we're about to hit it off. We're about to be pals. So I walk up to him, and he just looks up at me, like, with this menacing grimace. And he does this move with his hand where you just like it's like you're shooing a fly or a dog or something where you just take your fingers and you just kind of flip them out toward a person like palm down toward the ground, like go away.
Yep.
Like that shooing motion.
Oh, the shooing.
So he like has his pudding with his spoon in his hand, and maybe he put it in
his
cup. He basically
flicked pudding at you is what he did.
Right. I mean, he probably put the spoon back in the cup, but he just kind of goes like, get away from me. Like not talking to you. Not acknowledging your existence, but you're way too close. You're getting this idea that for some reason I'm going to talk to you, and that's not going to happen. And here Albert Bell was, 2 days earlier and 2 days after that at my Little League game, I'm doing his batting stance. But that's my Albert Bell story for you, Danny.
Well, here's what's wild. You go back to that, just thinking about how different eras are now. That lineup in 1999, their worst everyday hitter was Charles Johnson, who at 250 with 16 bombs. Delino DeShields, the next worst, a 264 hitter, was there to get on base and steal bases. And
by the way,
he didn't
this
work
is my bird squad that you're talking about right now.
Well, he didn't work
Delino
out as well as people
and
thought.
CJ? Oh.
But you look at this lineup. Will Clark hitting over 300. Cal Ripken at 340. That was the year he actually took a lot of games off, only played in 86 games. But it was a 340 hitter with 18 bombs as a part-time player. B.J. Surhoff, 308, 28 bombs. Albert Bell, 297, 37 bombs. Harold Baines, 24 bombs at 322. As a team, they scored 851 runs. Middling, middle of the pack, just an okay team, right? I mean, their Pythagorean should have had them 6 games over 500, which wouldn't have mattered. Instead, they finished 6 games under. They couldn't pitch. But good Lord, the offensive numbers are ridiculous for what people were doing. I mean, that group mashed, and they were just okay.
Scott Erickson on the hill, I could still do his. He used to, like, toggle his glove on the ball, like, back and forth, bringing his fingers in a bunch.
He did a toggle.
I could still do that. A lot of people are tweeting us the batting stances they used to do. If you want to call us and discuss that, why not? 800-636-1067. Would love to hear from you. A lot of people saying Gary Sheffield. Look, if you didn't pretend, or at least with your friends, joke like you were doing a Gary Sheffield stance at some point, then you didn't exist as a young person in the 90s. That goes without saying. But don't tell me in Little League, in-game, you were Sheffielding it, waving your bat back and forth over your shoulder. Like, this guy, Liam, is crazy. He says, for a few games in Little League, I tried to bat like Tony Batista. For people that don't know, Tony Batista would literally stand facing the pitcher's mound. So his left foot and his right foot were shoulder width apart, with his right foot next to home plate so that his entire body was open to the pitcher, and then he would kind of turn his body in toward home plate. It was the weirdest stance of all time. I spent hours perfecting that stance, but I would never have done that in a Little League game. You're not using that
game
like
that. You can't hit in a game like that.
There's no way. But that's a different thing. Like, that's what we call the Danny Ruye batting stance guy thing, where you could do the perfect, like, Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., Tony Bautista. And I've aced Tony Bautista. I'll post that one maybe on Instagram later today or something. But you're not using that in game. We're talking about what did you use in game.
So that was, you know, during when everybody's just so exhausted and they just want to go home. Summer after my freshman year of college playing in the Clark Griffith League, like here locally. So I was lucky. I had an advantage. I could stay at home. Everyone else has been away from home for so many months. People are tired. So in order to spice things up in a meaningless game, because we're not about to win the division or go to the postseason or whatever, so I would basically ask, like, who do you guys want me to do when I go to the plate? And basically throwing away an at-bat, not a very mature thing. Who do you want me to do? And so I would go in, and, like, the other team would be in on it, and I would do either, like, you know, an Albert Bell or a Mark McGuire or a Sosa. And, like, the coach would know something when I did Chuck Knobloch.
Why would you do that at that level? There's, like, scouts at those games.
I know. I'm not saying it was smart, but it was meaningless. These were, like, end of the summer. Everybody just wants to go home, and everyone's tired, and it was like, okay, ninth inning, we're down by 7 runs to the Arlington Senators that are going to go on and win whatever title. We're 30 games out here and just want to go home. Who are you going to do? And I would try to get a base hit like Chuck Knobloch. I would do, like, wacky bits. And then the coach got mad. Because you could tell Knobloch. If you're doing McGuire, maybe you don't notice. But if you're doing that hunched over, point the bat straight back at the umpire bit, it doesn't look real good.
You're born in 79 or 80?
79.
Okay. So 98, you're probably too old to have, like, been obsessed with Sosa McGuire stances then, I would guess. Like, because I'm 9 when that season started in 98. The Sosa hop after his homer and Sosa's outstretched arms at home plate where he would almost, it seemed like, be reaching toward the dish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You would have been, I mean, you're out of the age where you're, I guess, unless you're playing around, as you're saying, in a college, you know, summer league or something like that. But like, you're not emulating those stances just because you're a fan of those players. You're now your own baseball player.
Yeah, you're now your own guy. Yeah,
Sosa's was great, though.
I was in charge of Randles. I mean, that was my real role on the team. So that certainly included doing everybody's batting stance. I'm telling you, that batting stance guy who, like, made money off that, that was supposed to be my thing. That was my destiny, to be the batting stance guy. So, yeah, I did everybody.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. We can read a couple more tweets and take some calls if you got them at 800-636-1067 on this. Wanted to get into Luke Kuechly being hired by the Carolina Panthers, so we could do that next. Talking about Redskins that might make some sense in the scouting department or the front office. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, a Brendan Dar, Tom Daly production. They've got their own show debuting on Sunday at noon. 12 o'clock for the Brendan and Tommy show. Where are we at in the development of the program? Have we thrown some things against the wall that have stuck? Are we going to have a rundown? Or are we just going to kind of operate as we go? What are we thinking?
Well, I think we've officially decided that the show will just be called BT, so we can say we're BT.
I'm BT.
Big time.
And then from there, you know, we're going to have 3 hours to fill, and we're gonna fill it one way or another. One segment I would like to do is Dar and I are going to build a NASCAR DFS lineup on the air to share with all the listeners so we can all lose money together Sunday during the NASCAR race.
There's literally nothing worse than NASCAR DFS. Literally nothing.
I think that's a great idea.
I don't know. League of Legends is pretty bad.
I take.
They've been building lineups for a while online, on the air. It's always football. Why not build a NASCAR lineup right before the race on your show? It's not like there's other sports to discuss. I think that could be a ratings bonanza. You are going to play the birthday game as well.
Of course.
There's two
staple
segments
of the
right
show.
There.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about betting in D.C. too.
That's a good idea. We have covered that on the show as well. I mean, it's coming. You know, one way or the other, it is coming at this point. And it seems like maybe even by the end of the month, we'll be able to start making our bets. So we'll check in before the end of the broadcast for a detailed rundown, a preview of the BT show. Big time. Now, is it just the BT show or will it be referred to as Big Time?
No, I think it's just going to be BT. And then we're going to leave it open for interpretation.
Right. It's like a movie that doesn't have an ending where it fades to black.
Like, the dream would be if someone called us and said, hey, Brandon, love the show. And not Brendan, Brandon.
Right, Brandon. Because right. I'll Brandon. Be the Tierney.
I'm yeah. BT.
That would be incredible. If they
say, such an inside bit. It's so good.
Not sure how you're on locally today. Normally I've been listening to you and Tiki, but just wanted to say I love your work.
Appreciate you doing this.
Would be, really, really good. Danny Luke Keekly,
yes.
Or as my wife refers to him, Luke Cutely. Apparently, he's a very good-looking guy. Luke Cutely got a job. That's one of those, by the way, they're so close together that I always have to actually over-enunciate it. Like, if you go back and pull the audio from every time I've ever said Luke Keekly's name, I almost always overdo it. It's not just
you feel like you oversay his name. Yeah,
I have to say Luke Keekly so that I don't say Luke Cutely. But anyway, he's been hired as a scout for the Carolina Panthers. If you have followed his career at all, or you watched that All or Nothing series that I always over-reference now, he is the ultimate football lifer, film studier, I can't leave the facility until it's 1 in the morning, and I'm not leaving the field if I'm not on a stretcher type football-crazed person. Okay, that's
football
what he
player.
Is.
Football
it's
player.
The least surprising thing in the world that this Hall of Fame caliber talent who works as hard as he does, is being brought back in the organization as some type of liaison to the players. He's getting a scouting job, it sounds like, almost immediately to evaluate talent for them, which is pretty fascinating. And who knows, maybe he'll work his way up to the front office. But you know, you could just tell when guys are in your program who live and breathe football, who are really good, that may or may not matter in their next career. Like Luke Keekly, that makes it even better. But there are just certain guys that it's their life. And we had Kevin Grevy on talking about the late Wes Unseld, and he was talking about how he was so good, he didn't necessarily have to have that same love or that same passion, so he was a little bit surprised that he went into coaching and being an executive, but maybe that was because of how much he loved Dave Poland and wanted to help him out. Keekly's one of those guys, I think, the day you watch him practice for the first time where you go, I'll bet you that guy's still going to be somehow involved in the NFL in 30 years.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those... As you said, lifers, maybe gym rat, whatever, you know, sort of cliche term for guys like that. But that's the first thing you think of. I mean, and there's some Redskins that might fit that bill, by the way. Just
yeah,
think
that's
of
what
some
I
of the guys that we've
into
talked
with
to.
You.
Yeah. I mean, who was the first name you thought of? I'm curious to see if it was the same one I thought of.
Current players, so we can get to in a second. I mean, I'm thinking of guys that I have covered in the past. I always thought D'Angelo Hall would be a really, really good
That's
coach
mine.
In some way. You make him like initially a DB's coach, or if they wanted to just make him kind of work his way up the ladder and not put all that on his plate right away, you can make him an assistant to a DB's coach for a year or two, and then he's a DB's coach, and I could see him ultimately coordinating. I mean, he's had some interest in that. He reached out to the Redskins about coaching at one point. I've always thought if London Fletcher wanted to coach, that he could do that. Similarly, start him as like a linebacker's coach. These are the people that over the years, Danny, I saw kind of lead their position groups so extensively that they were almost like player coaches at one point in time anyway. They had coaching tendencies when they played. There are a bunch of other guys we can get into, but those are two of the first names that have always jumped out at me that would have a chance to continue their careers. Now, I don't, in terms of scouting, I mean, the first guy I'll tell you right now, if years ago, I thought this when he played, and I have him on the show now to break players down with you, Logan Paulson. You've heard Chris Cooley for years do his analysis of film and break guys down. Mm-hmm. He would be pretty good at it. Logan Paulson, to me, would be a really, really good scout. I think someone like Lorenzo Alexander, who we had on this week who played a bunch of positions and has been in different programs and seen how it works. I think he would be a guy.
All the positions. Right.
Right.
You did them all.
But seriously, I would hire that guy to my front office. I'd give him a role. I don't even know what it is. Make up a role for him. I want him around me. I want him talking. I think he's a successful person. And I think he could learn anything and could ultimately be some type of executive or GM or something. Like, those are the types of players to me. Mm-hmm. Handle themselves really well, carry themselves as professionals, get the most out of themselves talent-wise, and understand that, yeah, there are other things that matter, but you really got to love and be invested in football, because those jobs, it's not like you're showing up for a few hours and going home. That's not how it works.
So a couple current Redskins that jump to mind for this exercise. First one for me is John Bostic. I remember being blown away. I know it's another middle linebacker, so maybe it's a little bit hack, but remember talking to that guy before at training camp more than a year ago now, last year, and going, wow. Just kind of the same way you're talking about, right? Sharp as all hell, personable, the kind of guy that you'd want, you know, going into living rooms and saying, you know, ma'am, trust me with your son. I mean, whether it's college coach, scout, anything like that, you could see that he had the eye for it. And just such an impressive, smart, sharp dude who'd, you know, been around the league a little bit. Maybe could tell you about how this guy could fit into this system versus that system. Remember those kind of conversations about what's different with this 43, this 34, this, that, and the other. Blown away by him. The other guy I thought of, tell me what you think of this. Trey Quinn. Trey Quinn as a scout. He could be one of those guys that's like 26, already out of the league, but just sort of around because he's kind of like just loves it, just wants to run pass routes with his buddies, but is happy to go grind and hang out on a field and watch other kids do it.
I imagine being maybe. I'd have to talk to him more. I just don't have a good enough beat on, like, how he talks ball. You know what I mean? He might be really good at it. I mean, he's seen enough football, definitely, and he is a will over skill guy, I'd have to imagine, at this point,
as
he's trying to kind of stay afloat in the league. But I've only had that one conversation. You and I came away really impressed and really liking him. He's hilarious. But we liked him because he was funny and he talked video games in the office. I'm not sure about, like, his – to me, there's a football knowledge that puts you over the top in that regard. Who would you think – and you can call us at 800-636-1067 to answer this. Would, of the current Redskins, make the best staffer to work their way up as a scout into the front office? We can give our answers next at 800-636-1067. Also, we've been talking a lot about crowd noise and whether or not it matters. I mean, people realize that most of the broadcasts that are going to be happening are not going to be originating from the stadiums anyway. That's a bigger deal than crowd noise. In terms of the overall presentation and broadcasts of games, nobody seems to mention that a whole lot. We'll get into that on The Fan as well. The Panthers hired Luke Kuechly as a scout, got us to thinking which players on the Redskins the team might consider giving gigs to try to work their way up in the organization. So I've got a list of guys I jotted down during the break. I'll go through them. I don't have roles for them specifically, but these are just players that have impressed me enough when I've discussed football with them on the air or at the facility, and also in some cases just from afar, watching them like any fan does and seeing how they carry themselves, that I would be interested in them growing as members of this organization after their playing days. First and foremost, Terry McLaurin. I don't think there's a job on this planet that guy wouldn't thrive at. He is the type of dude that you want working alongside you, whatever you're trying to accomplish. What a mensch, what a salt-of-the-earth human being he is. I mean, so well-raised. He just, Terry McLaurin, to me, Danny, is, forget how good he is, because that's why I think he's become a number one wide receiver, and he was a much better player than I gave him credit for coming out of Ohio State. I didn't think he'd be bad, but I thought,
same here.
You know, back of the depth chart wide receiver and a special teamer. Had no idea what we were getting ourselves into.
Who did?
But I mean, he's
just an
impressive guy.
Yeah. 100%.
Go ahead.
Sorry. It was my fault. I was cut you off. But yeah, he was even advertised as a pretty good special teamer right away, and we'll see what he grows into. Oh, my God, is he good. And some of the smart people that do this for a living, Matt Harmon does reception perception for Yahoo, grades him out as one of the guys that's next, one of the next big things in the league based on, you know, how good he is versus man, versus zone, win rate, all the different things in the route tree. He's got it. He's got a chance to be really, really good. So that's exciting. So who had that? But and then when we talked to him, oh, don't you want to just be his friend? Don't you want him around? I mean, what an unbelievable guy. Think about this at that position where you're usually there's a diva associated mentality with the wide receiver, right? Where you sort of almost have to be that way to win all the time and be that kind of a selfish me first guy to keep doing it and accumulating the numbers. The opposite of that. Was willing to be the third option or fourth option at times at Ohio State. Was willing to do whatever it took. Just part of the group, and man, oh man, is it exciting that he's here.
Now, we're saying this about a guy who was a rookie last year, so give him 10, 12 years in the league, and maybe you can, you know, forecast him into a front office role or something like that. But my point with him and with a guy like, even I would say Nate Orchard. Remember when we interviewed him who, you know, was selling windows before he got that chance? Come back to the NFL and had a couple sacks against the Panthers. Like, those are people I want around me. I am a big believer in kind of a mindset and a willingness to work and just, you know, positivity being a contagious thing. You know, there are certain people in life, I don't care what you're doing. If you're building a house or you're mowing lawns or you're playing football or you are working at a Fortune 500 company, I think you can thrive with certain people around you. And then you just teach them and you learn how to do whatever it is that needs to be done. I'd put him on that list. A guy that I think tomorrow could be a coach of some type is Thomas Davis, who runs every locker room he's in. Like, that guy, to me, could be a defensive coordinator in 5 years, and it wouldn't surprise me. And if he's ultimately a head coach, I'd say it makes a lot of sense. He is, to me, what, like, Ron Rivera was years and years ago, probably. Better player, I would guess. I didn't get to see a lot of Rivera. But looking at the numbers, I would say he's a better player. But Thomas Davis has coach written all over him. And then the last one would be Alex Smith. You know, and we talked about this a lot last year as he was getting in tight with Dan Snyder, and it really seemed like he was becoming a candidate to be a front office exec with the Redskins. I mean, he was a first overall pick. He kind of made himself into this elite level prospect from being a guy in high school that not many people were looking at who was small. He's not only a good leader in the locker room, but I think he's a really good speaker because he doesn't say anything, and yet he has an ability to make you feel like you were glad you went to the press conference. Like, if that doesn't 100%. Scream football GM or head coach, I don't know what does. Now, do I think he'll be a head coach? I don't. But I could see him in a front office because he's got that almost like politician's way of going about talking where he rarely says anything interesting ever, but he's engaging and willing to discuss, you know, whatever it is that you want to. That's a skill. Like, it sounds like I'm being rude, and I don't mean that at all. I think that's something you've got to have, and I think he's already got it.
Yeah, I get exactly what you mean. I mean, that's a guy that's been around, has been at the top. He's been – now he's sort of – when your skills aren't what they were a handful of years ago, can you still get it done in the league? Well, how about, you know, in excess of 100 tackles last year as part of the Chargers? You know what I mean? Like, that's a guy that's gotten along, that's been a star, that's been, you know, that's been on the rise, that's been everything in between. So, yeah, and the ability to sort of speak without saying anything – at the podium is valuable. So, yeah, I get that one. I get what you mean.
Pushing to later in the show because I still want to talk about this. Everybody seems up in arms that we may have or may not have crowd noise, you know, that's going to somehow hinder our viewing experience of these sports because there's not going to be anybody in the stands. But it seems like no one's talking about the fact that there's a really good chance people are going to be sitting in a studio calling games. And I've done that before for the XFL Defenders with Logan Paulson at our headquarters in D.C. I've done it for the Washington Valor Games at Monumental Sports' headquarters at Capital One Arena. And while it can absolutely be done, it is not impossible. The networks are trending in that direction. It happens. It does take away, I think, from the play-calling experience, and it takes away, I think, in some way from the overall energy of the broadcast. To me, that's a bigger deal than whether or not there's going to be crowd noise. But we'll get into that in the back half of the show. The double play is next. We're an hour away from the movie club. I've got a listener who says he wants to give us a list today based on Netflix movies. So assuming he calls in, we'll have a listener-led list today on Grant and Danny. We watched Air Force One last night. We'll break it down at 12:45. Closing in on noon and the Beltway Blitz, which is 16 minutes away. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Second half of the show today, we'll be joined by a couple of guests to talk hoops with us. Jason Smith, the former Wizard. Locally, he can be seen from time to time on NBC Sports Washington as an analyst now. He was on with us last month. He was great. I wanted to get him back on to talk about the Wiz chances when basketball resumes. That's coming up at 1 o'clock today. And we have not talked about this at all, but I do want to get into this. And I don't know how we haven't, because it seems like it'd be a passion project of yours, to be completely honest with you. Zion and Duke are in a little hot water. And there's investigation going on as to whether Duke did anything improper knowingly with Zion Williamson. And it would just seem like something that you'd want to dance in and dance all over and gloat about. I'm surprised you haven't brought this up yet.
Well, I haven't really read all that much about it, which is weird.
So I did last night, finally. I got caught up on it yesterday.
I feel... Well, you know, I tell you what. Let me defer to you, because you sound like you've got more information than I do. I just kind of have gently seen the headlines and gone, oh, that's something, but I haven't gotten around to it, which you're right. It should be something I dive voraciously into.
Yeah, we'll do that at 12:18 in about 30 minutes, because I do want to chat about it and bounce some things off of you. But, I mean, look, everybody loves to clown Duke. So if it comes out that he got paid to go to Duke, or under the table something happened that led to him going there that shouldn't have, it was improprietary, I mean, you're going to see – a massive reaction all over the country for Coach K in that program. But we can get into that coming up in about a half hour on The Fan here on G&D. Let's get to our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
Shameless self-promotion, GP. Shameless self-promotion. I mentioned it before on the program, but I've got my little side project that I've been doing. A podcast called You Seem Interesting, and episodes 1, 2, and 3 are all up on my Patreon, patreon.com/funnydanny. And I know some folks are not comfortable contributing or supporting, and that is totally fine, which is why the first run of shows are all going to be for my subscribers. Now, episode 1, after everybody's had a chance to marinate and let it go, so we're on episode 4, I'm about to put that one up next week. Episode 1, now available broadly on most of your platforms. I'll be tweeting it out here in a moment at Funny Danny, but you got your boy on iTunes, on Spotify. I'll be on Google Podcasts soon, Stitcher, TuneIn. So wherever you get your podcast, please do your pal a favor, even if you hate my guts. Actually, you probably wouldn't do this if you hate me. But
I was going to say, why would they do you a favor if they hate your guts?
They wouldn't do it, they wouldn't be interested in this at all. But if you care at all, if you got a second, click on one of these links. It's going to be iTunes, again, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it. Show's called You Seem Interesting with me, Danny Ruye. Got some cool guests lined up each and every week. Interview somebody that's got a unique job and find out about their industry, what makes it go, what makes it hard, challenges, triumphs, all those kind of cool things there in between. So give a subscribe, give a like. If you're so inclined, you can rate it, and please rate it well, and share it with some friends. Let your friends know that this is happening. It's this weird algorithm that happens with this stuff where, like, the more good ratings it gets, the more people get to see it and they get a chance to get it out there. So we're looking to grow the show. So please do that if you are so inclined, and I appreciate it.
Time for my double play. I didn't have to turn on Netflix and watch Earth with the narration of Morgan Freeman to see this, but we were in the living room. This is a day or two ago now. And Allison calls me over. She goes, come over here. And there was a bird. I'm going to say that it was a robin. All right? We're going to call it a robin. Robins are like kind of black and like orangish red, right? Is that fair? I'm not a bird watcher.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what
it's like
are.
The most common type of bird around here. Yeah, it's a robin. I'm looking at it. Okay. It looks to me like a Baltimore Orioles like emblem almost, but it's not.
Yeah.
So – this is a robin. It's in our yard, and this thing is, like, messing around with what I thought was, like, some type of stick or something. Turns out, this little sucker, and it's a tiny little bird, is pummeling a snake. So there is a little snake, tiny baby snake, probably the length of maybe a little longer than a ruler, like a foot or so, and it's just a little guy, And the only reason you could tell it was a snake is because one side was like black and the other side was whitish. And every now and then you could see it make snake-like slithers as it was like being crunched up and munched on by this bird. Eventually, within a couple of minutes, the bird pummels it and it's completely gone, nowhere to be found because the bird has eaten it.
Whoa.
I thought at one point, do I go out? Do I save this snake? Do I? I mean, I'm watching. Like, it's weird to say this because it's not humans. But, like, my stomach turns still if, like, I see a video of, like, an actual fight in real life. Like, in a movie when people are punching each other, it doesn't do this. But, like, all these people that love getting on, like, World Star Hip Hop and these websites where, like, there's street fights and people knocking each other out, that makes me feel weird. It would be the same feeling as if, like, you're at school and you're in the cafeteria and two dudes start fighting and someone's getting punched in the face. Like, that's uncomfortable for me. I get that same feeling when I see a bird eating a snake. I don't know why that is, but
I don't
like
know
something
why that
is dying. So, something is it in danger. So I'm going, do I go out there? Do I chase the bird away and let the snake live another day? I don't even like snakes. It's just a little snake. It's I don't think it's a copperhead. I don't think it's a snake that can do damage. It's a little black snake that probably benefits me more than it hurts me in some way. It's certainly not a shark. It's certainly not something that would pummel me and kill me in my yard. It's just a little snake that would run from me if I walked out there. But Danny, it also reminded me, your boy, I just love nature. I don't know why. Like, these
nature
shows,
posted.
Though, people watch these shows where they watch, like, a lion eat a gazelle. I can't watch that. I love all these earth programs and all these things, but, like, I turn away. Like, somebody on Twitter was, like, circulating some video of, like, an animal eating another animal, like, weeks ago. And I'm like, to me, this is, like, the dark web.
You can't
this
do it.
This is so weird and so gross. How do people enjoy watching this? It's just not for me. But because it was a little snake and a little bird, I don't know why it was different. But I did see some of it and thought about helping the snake, but in the end I didn't. I just let the bird win.
Yeah, you should. That's the natural order of things. The only time you'd want to intervene is if it's like the family dog or, you know, something like that. But maybe you don't want like a coyote eating a rabbit, but you're also not going to go out there and be like, hey, shoo. You know, like you're not going to get in the way of that. I don't know.
But how different is a bird and a snake then? I mean, is the coyote and the rabbit the natural order of things? I mean, by the way, if that was happening, I can tell you right now, I would be compelled to like you said, I'm not going to actually go fight a coyote.
Right. You're not going to poke it with a stick and say, shoo. You know,
I'm not like,
going to
be that guy that
like
choked out a mountain lion that Drab made fun of because it wasn't that big of a mountain lion. Like he was some tough guy. Remember that bit?
Yeah, the starving mountain lion wasn't dangerous, said Drab out loud.
But I would like throw a shoe at the coyote or something and try to like get the rabbit a chance to get away. Wouldn't you do that? Like isn't
you throw a shoe?
Who throws a shoe? I mean, really?
A
shoe? What would you have done if you saw that bird eating that snake? Would it have in any way emotionally elicited any response from you?
Fist bumps, applause, joy.
Seriously?
Yes, heartfelt glee. Would have been awesome. Now, I wouldn't have done it for, like, a cute animal, for, like, a nice animal that, like I wouldn't want to see, like, an owl swoop down and get a chipmunk. Like, that's not fun. That's, like, an adorable little thing. But, like, one less slithering devil beast? Yeah, sign me up. That's awesome. Let's do that. But so it's interesting that it's basically any kind of injury to anything you can't watch. You can't stomach it.
No, because how do I feel?
That's
about
the world. That's the natural order of things. I'm not talking about World Star where dudes get knocked out.
Sports
but I mean, like,
injuries.
The lion has
I'm not
to has
good
to eat.
At watching. Okay,
I hate
like
those.
I turn away. Like I don't want. I wouldn't right now go put on the Joe Theismann video when Lawrence Taylor hurt him. I've seen it before. Willis McGahee. I've seen that injury. I am more likely if I know someone got injured to look at it. Now I might turn away or kind of make a scream or something. Like I'm not. I can't sit there and watch it 10 times. But curiosity kills the cat for me sometimes. And, like, the picture that is so gross of Alex Smith's leg when they carved out all the infection and all the muscles and the skin. And
yeah, take me away.
It doesn't look like a human leg, okay? I would never share that on social media and any of that stuff. Like, it is so gross. But I have looked at it, like, 1,000 times. I just think it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But if I saw him, like, that leg being, like, eaten by a bird? Yeah, that would freak me out, and I wouldn't watch that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you. I need the lion taking down the gazelle. I love that.
Oh, I can't do that. No chance I can do that. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is the Fan Blitzing Man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.